life, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Well, hello everybody, I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work. For the next hour, we'll be bridging the gap between the physical world and the afterlife when Spirit Guide Gregory Hay communicates with us through my husband Mick's incredible gift of deep trance channeling. As usual on the show, Spirit Guide Gregory will borrow his body to bring us information that will expand your knowledge about life on Earth, the universe and other dimensions. And today's show is, actually, I think we're going to be talking about animals and their soul groups. So if you have a question that you would like to join us with, then that would be fantastic. It's 077, hang on a second, I'm going to start again. Here we go. The number is a free phone in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756, and international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222. I've only been doing, this is only our 302nd show, you know, you'd think that I could get it right by now, but never mind.
You do mostly, don't you?
Yeah, we all get our words mixed up sometimes.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Mick Avery. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to say, same as Sylvie, really, welcome to the BBS Radio show that we have here. This is Spirit's Work, and we're live every Sunday at 1 p.m. EST. That's 10 a.m. PST and 1 p.m. EST and 6 p.m. GMT. Now, if you'd like to know more about us, our books or whatever, Kashic readings, we suggest you go visit our websites, which are at www.spirit-teaching.com and also at www.spiritsworkradio.com. And at www.mcavey.com.
Yes, they fell asleep before you got to the end.
They fell asleep already, didn't they? Yeah.
Gregory?
Anyway, hi.
This is going to be a good
as
show.
As Sylvie said, I'm a deep trance medium, which means I'm a pure channel for the spirit world, enabling clear, concise communication from those who continue to walk with us and who try to look after us. Not me, but them. Now, in this way, each week, on our show, Sylvie has a conversation with our spirit friends so they can give us the benefit of their wisdom. And as a result, we can get a different perspective on life, which means having choices and options we may never have realized were available to us. When I go into the trance state, I won't know of anything that happens until they bring me back. So they don't have any interference from me while Gregory is using my physical body, and that's probably just as well, as you can see.
Well, I've already, I'm bad today as well.
From my nattering gibberish.
I know, yeah.
Yes, but anyway, so I'm going to leave now, bye.
Never mind,
here we go. Yeah, never mind.
These shows usually turn out to be very entertaining anyway. Luckily, Gregory's usually always on form, so that's fine. Gregory is a spokesperson for a group of spirits of greater intelligence, shall we say, called the White Cloud Group, and they consist of eminent scientific minds of all description. They've come to help us to understand the nature of our existence and hopefully steer us toward a more harmonious future. This group is an educational group that's responding to a need of us, for us, the people who are searching for answers but didn't know who to ask, and a need for our planet as well, because it's essential that we change our attitude towards it. And the information that they bring will hopefully help us look at our world with a different perspective, as well as anything and everything beyond our world. And on this show, that we usually ask you for suggestions for topics that you'd like us to cover one week. And if not, if you can't think of a specific topic, then maybe you just have a question or a few questions. And if you can email them to me at enq@spirit-teaching.com, I can put them to Gregory on your behalf. Like I say, other than that, you can phone us on the free phone numbers 877-876-5227 USA, 888-815-9756 Canada, and the international number isn't free phone, but it's 001-530-876-3222. Okay, well, I do believe Gregory's with us.
Hello, Finn.
You are Gregory, aren't you, Gregory?
Hello, Finn. Hello, I am Gregory Hale of the White Cloud Group, born 1705 past 1723. Greetings.
Hello. So, hopefully you'll be a little more lucid than we were. I'm sure we're going to have fun anyway.
Yes, absolutely so.
So today, we were going to be talking about soul groups for animals.
Yes.
Where would you like to start on that? Because I do have some questions from our listeners already, and you'd like to start with a let's start at the beginning, a good place to start, in your eyes anyway.
Yes, it's actually quite difficult a perspective to paint to those on your side of life. After all, what came first, the chicken or the egg? In this respect, we must look at all of the different facets, in a sense, of what species are and what you understand species to be. Indeed, when you look at the soup of the world, of the earth upon which you live, and perhaps scientifically, matter-of-factly, you would understand that all life begat from different kinds of beings who created and inhabited your world, not that they created the world, but they inhabited your world through different chemical impositions and combinations that then enabled life in a physical sense to begin. And this life to begin with was very simple. However, we have to also understand that how the spirit world joins with this life and how it is that for different kinds of streams of beings, once they have an animate object of some kind of understanding or strategy which they deal with in their physical life, they then become attractive to those on our side of life. That is, the spirit of those spirit who have moved away, all those parts of God that have moved away from the central core of creation. These are what we would normally determine all spirit life to be. And in that respect, it means to say that when one is looking to ascertain, to understand truly the whole question of species and mutation as it applies to the spirit world, we are often finding as though this whole thing becomes quite a muddle. If you look at many different temperaments of many different religious understandings and theocracies, you will see that there are many, many different explanations for the state of species vis-a-vis the spirit world and how they then manifest themselves after their physical life, or how their different spirits are in fact attracted to different forms of life when it's an animate object of biology in the physical diversity plane. So what we have to look at then is the whole question of the creation of species and how different spirits are actually aligned to them, that they themselves in fact become the soul groups of their intention. So first of all, you have to understand that, biologically speaking, there are many, many beings of different species who are inextricably linked and aligned to yourselves. So that means to say, in the universe, in the multiverse as a whole, there are many different beings who are of a similar vibration. Perhaps even a similar orientation as human, as the human vehicle or vessel. As you rightly perhaps observe on your side of life, there are many different strains of human physical activity. You could say this about all of the different variations of your own single species. the different color pigmentations, the different sizes, shapes, and oddities that have come to make up that mutation of that particular strain of the human identity. And in exactly the same way, if you look at the broad scope of the mutation family tree of human destiny, you will see that of all of the other many primates and many other beings of the whole soul group of intention of that group of beings, you will see that there are some who are more warlike, there are some who are more gregarious, perhaps, different beings who are innately, in a sense, superior, and yet do not seem to have a mind to muddle with. So, biologically speaking, you can paint many different pictures about what you suppose a species identity to be. If you look at oneself, is it that you are modeling yourself on a gorilla or an ape of some other form? Or is it that you would rather attribute oneself as being some other kind of primate? How the difference is effected then is really to do with the spirit of their orientation. We have to understand exactly how it is that, biologically speaking, you may have the cell structure of a human being, but not always is the spirit of that human being going to be of the model that you would assume it to be, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So you may have, for example, I'm not saying then, dear friend, that you would have a being who is the embodiment of a physical person, but that their spirit is that of a snake, or that of a scorpion, or that of some other being, you see?
No.
However, their spirits are actually from a different location within the soul group hierarchy. That does not mean to say hierarchy as in layers of superiority. It is really to do with a different form of vibration. And part of the reason, incidentally, as to why it is that certain species inhabit a certain kind of way of life. Not to say that everything is down to evolution or the state of that. Sometimes, for example, it may be that beings themselves create a different kind of husbandry about their lives. And in actual fact, through their whole scope of thinking, that they bring up a whole and totally different realm of opportunity to do with that. Now, what I'm talking about here is that, for example, you may well think that one certain species living on your side of life, let's take bees, for example, that one sort of species of bee is more intelligent than another. Well, possibly, it might well be that one form of bee actually has a greater understanding of intention and therefore is not so dramatic, is not so aggressive. And yet you'll have another type of bee which is very aggressive. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that in that respect you're dealing with insects, but don't misalign the situation.
No,
insects have feelings.
Yes, and we'll cover them all. Absolutely.
Oh, yes, absolutely so. So the reason why I've jumped to that is because, for example, there are certain parameters of which human beings tend to be fixed in when they are applying the whole situation to bees, because they think that, broadly speaking, their characteristics are within a certain alignment.
Mm. Yes.
And that they cannot move outside of that. They cannot show emotion. They cannot show tenacity. They cannot show tenderness to one another, or even work out a problem and find a solution to it. That it doesn't involve making themselves run about in circles or fly up against banging their heads on windows or something like that. It's just entirely dependent upon how you view and see the species. So in this respect, then, you would see that the species of bee, and that includes all bees, that includes all honeybees, all bumblebees, all bees that live in the earth, in trees, live in places, hidey hole places, in caves, and openings in the earth in other ways. They also form nests in trees and all different kinds of paraphernalia, but they are all basically the same species. In the soul group hierarchy, if you look at it, you'll actually see that the superior part of it is that there are many forms of bee and different creatures associated with that throughout the universe that actually have very similar roles to play. That is, not just that they gather honey for the sake of it, for the mutation and constant creation of their own species, or the prolonging of it, of their genetics. It's actually for other facets of their life too. So that means to say that bees actually have another opportunity, another situation to create within their life journey and experience. And in actual fact, they are more than capable of working out problems and overcoming obstacles. Particularly, I have to say, if they are challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with the situations, various situations that you have at this present time, I understand in the country of France that there are honeybees which generally, at this moment in time, had not ever come across the Japanese hornet. Never ever in their upbringing or in their mutation experience, in their whole history of being bees, throughout millions and millions of years, had they ever come up against a Japanese hornet or Chinese hornet, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And in actual fact, these creatures, the Chinese hornet, is something like 3 inches wide across, you see?
Mm-hmm.
A very large being.
Grief, yes.
And actually eats honeybees.
Ah.
Bites the heads off.
Okay.
And then takes back the parcel of the body to the nest for the young pupa to feed on. So naturally, one could assume then, this could be very detrimental to a kind of bee that has never, ever understood or come to face to face with such an enormous problem.
Mm,
no. That's a bit like having an elephant attack human beings and eat and bite their heads off.
Exactly,
you see?
Yes, yes.
Same equivalent,
a new
really.
Predator.
Yes, absolutely so. So, but that in actual fact, because of the bees' complete tenacity and understanding, they were actually able to get together and understand how to actually create a pathway of change to this particular hornet. And what they were able to do was to actually gather around it and make it overheat so that it would actually die of a lack of oxygen.
Wow.
And that is exactly what they learned to do from communication from one another.
Mm.
They actually simply watched the hornet, some of them watched the hornet at work, and understood exactly how to make it be overcome by the whole hive. This didn't happen overnight, and many tribes of bees, we'll say, actually fell foul of the hornets, and they raided many, many different hives, and created great catastrophe over many, many different populations of bees, right across France. But then what happened was, they then subsequently, from the few that had come together and worked out the problem and understood how to fix it, because of their tenacity, of their spirit, and the tenacity of the beings that they were, then simply what they were able to do was to pass on the information to all of the other hives. And so, this is not just about physical beings overcoming obvious obstacles. It is actually about a constriction of one species who becomes confronted with something that is completely alien.
Well, yes, isn't that what you were talking about, working out one and one?
Yes, Really? Absolutely so. Yes, and so
if
then...
If I do this, this will happen.
Yes, yes, absolutely so. So it's showing the delivery of the product of what we call one and one, which means to say that it defines a being or a species as having not just sense, but mathematical probability, understanding, self-awareness, has a complete a grasp of its faculties, and seeing an object to overcome is able to work out exactly how to achieve that goal.
Absolutely.
And so that means to say that the spirit of this whole family, not just this one species of bee, but that in actual fact, it means to say that the whole species is completely aligned with it. You see?
No, absolutely. Yes. Don't know what that noise was, but there you go. It's gone now.
Yes, and you can see that it's still on.
Sorry, everybody.
What you can hear, what you hear is still displayed.
Yes. Okay.
So do you see? So you have that situation then where ordinarily you would define a species as being one thing, but actually it's something completely different, which actually underlines what I'm saying about the whole species criteria that human beings have placed upon it. Oh, it's just an insect. Mm. No, it isn't.
Mm.
You see? Mm. And because of bees themselves and the very, the absolutely vast form of species of, a spirit that is attracted to that form of life, is actually extremely virulent and extremely intellectual and very understanding.
So how does that relate to when they get back to the spirit world then? I mean, as a being, as something that you would want to relate to, you know, when you were in the, when you were all in the spirit world sort of thing. How would you see a bee colony? Are they still in a colony? I started off like this, didn't I, Gregory?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about
that. I did
everybody.
See that. Yes. I saw that coming in a sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, so how do you relate? Are they still keeping some of their characteristics?
Oh, absolutely so. Yes, and particularly ones which had actually worked out the problem are still currently, I understand the initial ones had passed on. But not before they were actually able to share their experiences and their understanding, which they had worked out from the whole situation and program.
Yeah.
So that means to say then that they have passed on all of those works of how to do this with this particular insect or this particular being. They've actually managed to work it out and pass it on to others. A bit like, I suppose, a human being writing a book.
Well, yes. I mean, is that passing it on to others, other potential bees who want to have a physical life? I mean, presumably they pick to have a physical life the same as we do.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely so. And it means to say that, and this also incidentally does apply to many other bugs as well.
Mm.
So you cannot think in terms of bugs being illiterate beings, beings who have no feeling, no sense, no anything else, you see?
But they weren't bees before they had a physical life, were they? They were beings.
They were beings, yes.
But they weren't bees. So what were they? What were they before?
They were spirit.
They were, okay.
And part of the soul group of bee.
Okay, that we would call bee.
Yes, which is called myapne.
Myapne.
Myapne, yes.
Okay.
Which is spelled MHYAPPI. Then there appears to be a space with four dots which are placed in a kind of a diamond configuration.
Why would that be?
I have absolutely no idea whatsoever, friend. That's just
how it is. Well, that sounds like they're from another planet or something.
From another part of yes, absolutely so.
And is, does that happen? Is that the case with other situations of animals
of being
that we get here?
Yeah. Yes, yes, of course. Because after all, much of it had arrived in the various forms of interstellar water vapor and crystal, which had been gradually attracted to the planet as it was formed.
Do you want to explain more?
Yes, well, I suppose because if you look to many different parts of the various, well, I suppose really the dimension in which you live in, the multifaceted dimension in which you live in, if you look out into space, you will see that there are vast clouds of ocean which exist in space. These are at absolute zero. So that means to say that is around, I believe, between 200 and 400 degrees below.
Okay.
So that means to say that these actually can contain beings which have become a part of that when perhaps the planets that they had lived on previously had exploded or had then subsequently been turned into vapor, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So these are really to do with beings who travel from one part of the universe and known to you to another part. And in actual fact, you will find that there are many, many beings who are part of the original, in a sense, mutation camp, if you like, part of the original clutch of species, which then began to be favored by the warming up of the planet of Earth as it evolved, and that was, in effect, how part of the chain of species became enacted. Then there were different cycles of events that then happened as well from other planets in your solar system. So, for example, there was a time period of around 1.5 billion years when Mars, the planet Mars itself, had and supported life. But it was only for quite a limited time, as opposed to the extent to which the billions of years that your planet has existed, and at which time it was able to support life. You see, so you will actually find that there are species which are common to many planets, and these tend to be the ones that are, to begin with, are microscopic in nature, some of them. Others can be quite large, not the size of dinosaurs or anything like that, but actually quite large in terms of a being living in a mass of ice crystal or perhaps a mass of maybe an embodiment of ice crystal. After all, ice crystals form many different types and forms of body throughout your known universe. And some may be in the forms of different kinds of projectiles as they move from one part of the quadrant of the universe to another.
So is there any way of knowing then which ones did come like that and then evolve? Other than the ones that just did purely evolve, well, I suppose, you know, as a spirit species.
Yes, it's actually quite difficult because it goes so far back into the history of the universe itself.
Mm.
And what we have understood from all of this and from the many different kinds of species there are, as you can imagine, with the number of species that are accredited to the planet of Earth, there are equally many different numbers of species accredited to their own planet in their own solar system or their own star formation.
Hmm.
So, but there are common denominators that appear to be throughout.
Okay.
And these are that there are species of beings that are kinds of insect, and these vary in many different sizes. Some are the size that you have on your side of life, and others are bigger than human beings.
Yes, well, I was just going to say that. So does that mean there are bigger versions of the ones that we do have? Or even possibly smaller?
Oh, yes, absolutely so.
Of most things?
Of most things, yes. Yes, because not to say that it's all limited to the Earth, because in actual fact it isn't. it's not limited to anywhere apart from having a planet that can, that actually has the same combination. So that means to say that there will be variations. There will be a certain kind of being that's a bit like a bee that may not have the same mandibles or the same mouth parts or even breathe in the same gas combination as bees do or as life does upon the human physical earth, you see? Mm. Because there are many different associations with many different kinds of combinations of chemical structure that actually enable life to exist in other forms, not as you know it.
So there must be quite a few different species that don't actually fit into a mould that we can put our finger on, you know, as far as the Earth goes.
Yes, it is quite difficult, actually, particularly with the very many millions of different forms of virus and bacteria.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they are, in a sense, fundamental, believe it or not, to all forms of life. Because, after all, you as a being carry around with you perhaps around 8 to 12,000 different forms of bacteria.
Okay, so let's go on to, what about the dinosaurs then?
Moving swiftly on.
Well, I'm just thinking,
yes.
I'm still thinking about other worlds and other species and,
yes,
you know, let's face it, they you know, look like really large lizards and that sort of thing.
And they are.
And yes. They are. Okay, yes. So well, what's the, is there a connection there with other planets and how they got here?
Well, the point is how they arrived, in a sense, was not as lizards. How they arrived were, it's actually quite difficult, but they actually arrived beginning as sea creatures, of course.
Yes.
So the sea created a great deal of it, you see?
Yes.
That means to say the whole way in which the various different sea creatures actually evolved. And that wasn't to say that they did so all on their own either. They had help from elsewhere, really to do with the different cycles of beings and how they then became a part, in a sense, of a different sort of pathway. So, for example, you would have certain kinds of beings, like the various different kinds of whales, beaked whales, or others, whereby they are actually the starting point, not to say that they were the starting point, but that whole species and that whole raft of evolution was, in effect, the starting point of almost more than half of all beings that live upon the land.
Okay, what, the wolves?
Yes, and
hippo.
That's, yes, wolves, hippopotamus, cows, all cloven creatures, cloven hoof creatures, all creatures with hooves of any variety. And all, in that case, beings such as cats and dogs, all beings, actually, who had an upright or sedentary life.
So, as far as
human beings would be included in that.
So as far as soul groups go, then really all animals virtually are connected in some way or another.
Yes, absolutely so. And not just through the evolutionary tree, but also through the whole situation of the hierarchy of spirit. So it means to say then, when you are looking at the spirit world in respect of the soul group evolution, you are not really seeing that the differences are only painted in their physical life. When you are looking at it spirit to spirit in the ether world, what you're actually dealing with are many different understandings and lessons, if you like, of different forms of life, which take on different habits when they're having physical life. But for many, they are almost like one of the same. They're not completely, because since having evolved physically, they are also evolving in this respect of different soul groups. So that, for example, within the situation of whales, whether they're beaked or not, you will see that there are probably 4, perhaps 5.5 million different soul groups that are associated with Wales.
Gosh, that's a lot.
Yes, but that's because of the many different facets of capability and knowledge that they have. They're very ancient, ancient beings, you see.
Oh, presumably, that's not just taking into account the physical Earth species of,
no, absolutely
of
not.
Whale.
No, absolutely not. And also, it means to say that it takes into account as well all of the many different planets upon which those kinds of beings exist, and also to do with the very many different characteristics that have then since grown up from them to create other and new species. If you are actually looking at whales, they are one of the starting points of how species evolve on a grand scale to do with all physical life.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yes.
So in a sense, they are what we would call a cardinal species, because they're one of the foundation stones of how spirit may evolve. That doesn't mean to say either that the spirit of whales are lesser. In fact, because of their state of understanding, it means to say that they tend to be the beings that we all look up to in the spirit world, you see?
Oh, in the spirit world?
Oh, yes, absolutely so.
That's interesting. Isn't it? I mean,
to have a conversation with a whale or with a dolphin or some such being is the most beautiful experience, one of the most beautiful experiences you can ever have as a spirit.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean that most sincerely.
Mm.
It's part of the reason why we had developed so many different parts and strains of the understanding of whale.
Yes,
and all of those kinds of forms of being.
Yes, we've done a triple CD of whale information from you, and haven't we? And lots of programs on whales.
And many of the other parts of their offspring who are facing extinction.
Yes. So when we think of these animals coming from other planets and dimensions that we don't know of, in that way, we're not saying that, because one tends to actually think of them as actually being the only inhabitants of a planet. Do you know what I mean? Like some science fiction.
Yes, but for some planets they are.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh yes, absolutely so.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, which animals have actually are the sole inhabitants?
Well, whales, for example. They actually live on other planets which are far, far larger than the Earth, perhaps as large as your sun.
And they actually, shall we say, rule that world?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, how interesting is that? That's brilliant.
Yes, and they sing much like the whales that live on your side of life.
But presumably, they must be a lot larger then, if planet is larger.
Not necessarily.
But they live in water?
They live in a very similar environment. Some, however, live in exactly the same way that they do in the spirit world, which is that, as some of you may know or understand, that whales and dolphins and all beings of that nature actually live in the spirit world, not in water, but they fly.
So is it sort of like...
They're aerial beings.
Yes, so is it like swimming, only not in water?
Yes, that's
because
right.
There's none there?
Yes, that's
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. So their spirit has that kind of experience.
Yes.
So it means to say that when you are actually communicating with them, you usually have to do that moving. You don't communicate with them in a static place. Because they like to always be going to somewhere else, you see?
Yes. Constantly in motion.
Yes, they enjoy it. That's just their whole inference, yes,
yes,
of their being. So it means to say then that I understand that human beings may have trouble in identifying, well, what came first, because, as you know, within the hierarchy of evolution of the physical world, you would see that whales actually originated some considerable time, of course, after the Earth became cool enough to support life, but that in actual fact it was really to sort out the chemical situation that had to come first before any life could really exist in any great number.
And what do you mean by that?
What I'm talking about really is because the chemical structure was something that was far more poisonous, so it had to be until it was actually created largely by volcanic activity and these different kinds of situations, which then created different forms of structure of nutrients that were then able to support life. And that was how it began to be that, for example, the first creatures that then created oxygen were actually to do with sea, not on land, you see.
Yes.
In exactly the same way as the same creatures continue to give oxygen to the world upon which you live. And that's why it is that beings such as sharks have to be kept in their own environment. They have to be actually allowed to populate your side of life in order to keep down the pests, the beings, the small fishes that actually eat the algae that supply you with oxygen.
Yes, keep the balance from the top.
Yes, quite so. That's right.
Wow. So what other animals are the keepers of their planet, shall we say, that is the sole inhabitants of that planet? And then I'll ask you a question.
There are different beings. There are some who are like a form of locust, in fact, but they tend not to have planets because they tend to eat them out. So they tend to exhaust them, a bit like human beings, I suppose.
That's very science fiction, isn't it?
Science fiction.
Well,
that's just the way that it is.
It's typical, obviously the spider, the locust, the reptile, there's certain species that we always depict in a sort of scary way,
Yes, spiders aren't actually, not at all. And particularly when they are aligned much closer to different kinds of beings that live on your side of life, who are not, how can I say this? In a sense, when you're talking about spiders, you have to put octopus in the same vein, not to say that they're the same being, but actually they have a similar spirit.
Really?
Yes, so when you are looking at spiders have ectoplasmic shells, so their skeletons they have an ectoskeleton, which is on the outside of their being, whereas an octopus just has a very small part of a skeleton and is actually almost like the opposite version of a spider. You see, but that in actual fact, what happens is that both have a similar outlook, and they both have the same forms of intelligence. So that's part of the reason why you would actually have beings who are spiders in physical form that have thinking capabilities, that have abilities, and once again, to create the pathway of one and one, to work out problems, work out mathematical solutions of how they move or create protective areas for themselves.
Well, look at their webs.
That's
planning ahead, isn't it?
Yes, but it's also mathematical.
Yeah.
They are mathematical geniuses.
Wow.
And that also applies in similar ways to octopus. Squid, not so much, because squid have a bit missing in their physical life existence. So it's like they're a bit like octopus wannabes, in a sense, but they actually have a part that is not the same as octopus, you see?
So do spiders have a planet?
No, they actually reign in many parts of the universe.
Okay.
They are part of a natural cycle of continuance.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. I thought they had a place where they did, or was it a soul group?
They have a very complex soul group hierarchy.
I was just remembering, trying to remember a conversation that we had before about spiders, and I thought that they had something along the lines of a soul group situation going on, or something or other.
Yes, they do, but they're very different. The point is, because of their mathematical state of mind and their ability to think outside of themselves, they have amazing spatial awareness, which is part of their ability of their spirit to perceive, or rather their spirit comes through their physical journey, so that they're actually able to create not things that are nice for the human physical eye pathway. They're not, like, in a sense, subservient. They're beings in their own right. So it means to say they only do anything that they do is only ever for a reason. And it's very specific.
Okay. I have a question here from Gail. It's rather long, so I'll just tell you the basic
yes, please do.
Situation. Is
yes,
it?
Yes.
She's just really, really frightened of spiders. I mean,
yes.
Really. She respects them greatly and really doesn't
yes.
like killing them. If she can avoid it, but she can't even trap them in a glass or anything like that take them outside, you know, in a glass humanely.
Yes.
So if she...
Because of her fear of them.
Yes.
Yes, I understand.
And she doesn't want to squish them, but she does have to if they come near her and if she can't get them out any
yes.
other way.
And particularly as well, because of where she lives, actually some of those that live in that area are able and capable... quite capable of jumping perhaps 8 feet.
Oh, well, I'm sure you've just made her feel great.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's a fact.
Like, so, Gail, if you didn't feel bad before. Okay.
So,
no, I'm
but,
sure she
but my
that.
Point really is that for her and for many people like her, actually, we actually have our instrument who is equally as bewildered by them.
Yes. Yeah.
What you really have to learn to do, however, Gail friend, is to learn to try to quell your fear, fright. I understand that it's logical, but that in many respects, actually, they should be considered as being your friends because they're actually keeping down the insect population.
And they have intelligence.
And they have actually very good intelligence, yes.
I guess it's in the wrong place at the wrong time, isn't it?
Yes, that's
really?
Right. So there should be a device, my dear friend, that you can acquire, which is a spider capture unit.
Okay.
And but that rather than it being a clear transparency object, that what you need to do is that when you obtain one, which has it's quite a large piece, like a large plastic box with a sliding drawer at the front of it, and that all you then need to do is that you have to colour it so that you cannot see
it.
The being that's inside, you
yeah,
see?
Yeah, yeah. So try and get one of those and basically just do what you're doing when you go out of your house in the morning with your broom to get to the car, because they do make
yes, so I understand.
In
yes.
inappropriate places.
Yes, then you just have to use your broom in order to clear your pathway. And just try to do that in the best way that you can without screaming or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it could be Einstein. He just squished Einstein.
I wouldn't say that, my dear friend.
Well, not literally, but I mean, you know,
yes.
hey, the Einstein of the area, the spider area that
yes,
she
yes.
lives in.
Well, quite so.
I mean, if they're intelligent, how about one and one that you were talking about earlier on and planning and organising other situations apart from web making. And
yes, well...
Because they do eat each other as well, don't they, Gregory?
Yes, not as a general choice on their menu, my dear friend.
Well, in the mating ritual and that sort of thing.
Yes,
they
but that's
do.
Different.
It is?
That's different, yes.
Still uncalled for, if you ask me. Not very nice.
Well, females to eat males.
Yeah, well, there is that, I guess. Okay, but so as far as intelligence goes, and working out problems and...
Yes. The problem is that for spiders, they don't actually orientate on the same energy level as human beings. So that means to say that a lot of the time, they're not actually picking up the sensory awareness of what a human being is going through. Or alternatively, at other times, you might have one who is a bit naughty and is actually using that. Perhaps they may even sense the fear of a human being, you see?
Well, I'm sure there are different species that are more in tune, if that's the right description.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. They are of a different vibration. But the vibration to spiders is centrally important to their survival.
Mm.
So they have to be aware of a being's pheromonic projection. And that can be sometimes interpreted as aggression.
Is it a learnt thing, behaviour, being frightened of spiders? I mean, there's always
it is
the
usually learnt.
Snakes, etc.
Yes, it is usually a learnt psychosis.
Yes.
That doesn't mean to say that there's something wrong with the person. It's just very unfortunate that they have been presented in a certain situation, usually when very young.
Mm. So it can be an actual experience. And
that has then got out of hand, out of control,
or,
you see.
As for me, when I was young, I'm not frightened of them now, not that I'd want one on me necessarily, but I can get rid of them in a jar or whatever.
Yes.
But I used to know somebody that did used to scream living daylights when she saw one. And so I thought, oh, well, OK, I'll do that then. But I thought it was after a while. It was a bit pointless, you know.
Yes.
But I still was left with not wanting one on me or...
No, I understand.
You know, like that, anything. I mean, that's quite okay, I would think. But, yeah, so a learnt behaviour as in seeing somebody else doing it.
Or it's actually an effect that you have gone through yourself, yes.
Can I just go back to the locusts that you were saying that they didn't have a planet? So where do they live then? If they...
Well, that depends. They have tended to go from one planet to another in some respects, or that they have just simply sat it out on one particular planet and then, in a sense, not knowingly necessarily, but they had then waited in a sense for a change in the whole evolutionary state of themselves, usually by very, very gradual chemical changes to the atmospherics of the planet itself.
So they haven't got little spaceships, Gregory?
No, they don't have little spaceships, Ben, little bird.
Hmm. So, but...
That is something that's more left to raptors. And before anyone thinks of this, that is not just something that is given to the name of birds or lizard beings of the physical earth. The point that you have to understand is that raptor creatures actually live in many different parts of the universe.
Mm. Yes.
That are from a similar family.
Yes. Okay.
That is scale-like beings or beings that have different skin mutations.
Yes. Okay, well, that's really fascinating. We've almost come to time, actually.
Yes.
I think there are lots of different animals that I'd like to cover.
Yes.
Next week, hopefully, and find out lots of interesting things about them and their habitat in the spirit world.
Yes, quite so. Absolutely
as well as,
so.
You know, if you can bring any other information about animals actually... occupy other planets.
Yes, of course.
That's
because,
fascinating.
Yes, because after all, they all have, for those ones that have conscious awareness, That means to say that all of that conscious awareness dream is brought back to our side of life upon their passing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, do they all, this is something else, you know, do they, okay, whales occupy a whole planet, like you just said, and don't share it with other beings. Well, they have to share it with some other beings, don't they?
Yes, of course. Otherwise, they wouldn't live.
Well, we want to know about those, don't we, folks? So, and other situations as well.
Yes,
that's fantastic. So, we'll talk about that in the week, and we'll organise a show for next week.
Yes, yes.
And,
quite so.
Fabulous.
Very well then, friend little bird. Thank you so very much, everyone. God bless upon your journeys.
God bless. God bless, Gregory. Yeah, we hope you've enjoyed the show. Please go to our website, www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us and our work. You might want to book yourself an Akashic reading with Gregory. I highly recommend it. Well, but then I would, wouldn't I? You can find out about that, too, on our Akashic readings page on our website. And like I said before, if you've got a question or two or a show suggestion, you can email me. And if you want to, you can get that from the website, again, at enq@spirit-teaching.com. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work on the amazing and the wonderful BBS Radio. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.